Howdy, y'all. This is Rob Wolf back for another edition of the Paleo Solution Podcast. They have not shut us down and people are still listening, so we're still doing it. But we'll see how much longer that goes on. Today, I am very honored to have two of my very dear friends, folks who have done more to perpetuate, promulgate, and generally perpetuate these ideas of paleo and ancestral health. Keith and Michelle Norris, how are y'all doing?
Doing great. Doing wonderful.
Awesome. Doing
thank
awesome.
Thank you for having the fun.
Nice.
So you're going to hang that on us, huh?
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. That was all my line. I was going to say, you're to blame. I mean, you're responsible for helping us start Paleo.
Yeah, I take no responsibility for that at all. So, yeah. So how, I know everybody is familiar with you guys, but you both have very interesting backgrounds. Keith, you ranging from, high-level athlete and then working in the wee brush with the pharmaceutical industry. Michelle, you've got an extensive business background. Give folks a little bit of your backgrounds.
Go ahead, Keith.
Michelle.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a trained chef. And but my background has been extremely varied. I'm a kind of a serial entrepreneur, and I've been a project manager. Used to build Starbucks. I know that's horrible, awful.
I think it's doing God's work. I mean, the more caffeine in the world, the better. So I have no issue with that. I'm not that person.
So I've just done all kinds of things. But I love business. I really believe heavily in capitalism and really kind of in the mom and pops type of capitalism, but did go work for the man, sort of. I worked for a small business that actually built Starbucks, so really enjoyed that. And then when everything kind of went, bust, and Harold Schultz came in and said, oh yeah, we're going to shut this down and stop building so many Starbucks. I lost my job and everything. And I did a lot of chefing and stuff on the side at that time. And I was food writing and everything. And that was about the time Keith started dabbling in, it was a little bit before that Keith had started dabbling in paleo, and we had just kind of gone paleo at that time. So it was it's been a little crazy. It's been a real crazy ride. I don't know. And then this kind of took off. So we, we shifted everything. The kids were still in the house at the time. And, when you have kids, you kind of have to, stay in a job, and, you have to have a steady paycheck, cause they like to eat. And I don't know, we can,
ungrateful little buggers, man.
I know.
Yeah, right. It's funny how that works.
Yeah.
But so, we decided that, once they were, out from under our roof and we could do things, the way we wanted to and kind of pursue our passions, we decided to, run for it. And the only ones that we, have to worry about now are the dogs, and they can, eat out of trash cans, and they're pretty cool with that.
Or if you guys pass out unconscious, they'll just consume you. So, I mean, it's kind of a win-win all the way around if it goes totally sideways. Nice.
Great. Yeah. Totally
great. Keith, you give folks a little bit of your background and then remind them about your early blog work on theory to practice. That was one of my favorites for ages.
Yeah, so I came up as a young type A win and eating cost athlete, starting at about 11 years old, actually, running AAU track and field and doing some kickboxing on the side. Had the opportunity to be around some of the absolute best coaches anywhere. And I didn't know it at that time and really didn't appreciate it, but I was winning a lot and was doing very well. And, looking back on it, these coaches really knew what they were doing. I mean, for a 12-year-old to be in a weight room, a 12-year-old sprinter to be in a weight room working, and not in a bodybuilding sense, but in a very systematic, planned out, periodized weight training system was, kind of unheard of at that time. And we're talking, 76-ish. This is going back.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of morphed out of the sprinting track and field that, once I hit puberty full blown, I kind of flowered into this different type of athlete that was started to get run down at about 60 meters in the sprints. And I was wondering, what the hell's going on here? anyway, it still had some decent quickness. Was able to parlay that into a really good football career. Moved on, played through high school, played at Texas State. After my football career was done, I went into the military for 9 years. And this whole time, I just had this very, very, very keen interest on strength and conditioning. Unfortunately, at the time that I was done with college, nobody made any money at this thing called strength and conditioning. Nobody.
Right.
I mean, we had Boyd Epley out in Nebraska who was making some money at it. But other than that, you could be a starving grad assistant, and that was about it, yeah, money-wise. Had a family by this time, very, very young. Both Michelle and I both had kids while we were still kids. So, there, you know, the grad assistant thing wasn't going to work out. I had to put some food on the table. So I went into the military. But I still had a keen interest in strength and conditioning, read everything I could get my hands on, trained others while I was in, and just kept learning and going on. Flash forward a little bit further, I had an opportunity to work with some D1 athletes at East Carolina University, still kept picking up a lot of tips, learning the whole time, was immersed in the evil empire of the pharmaceutical industry and pushed that agenda just as hard as I could until I rose up to the ranks, you know, rose up through the ranks a little bit and figured out, hey, these people really don't have the human condition at heart. They have a bottom line at heart. And that was kind of a cold slap in the face to me, to somebody who thought he was really, really doing good. And I don't want to totally bash the pharmaceutical industry. They do some fantastic things, but let's face it, a lot of their R&D money goes to the next Viagra,
right.
And that's bottom line. They've got to pay bills. You know, they're an entity that needs to make money, just like any other entity that needs to make money. And so the next antibiotic is not top and first and foremost on their list.
Right.
So got disillusioned with that. Started writing the Theory to Practice blog, which has been on a bit of a hiatus here lately while I'm doing some site redesign.
Yeah, and I'm pissed about that, by the way.
I've had
to start cooking up my own stuff, so I'm mad about that.
Yeah, it'll be back soon. I've had so I don't, you know, Michelle and I have a couple of other businesses that we run other than FX.
Yeah, like 16 of them. So
So it's a constant juggle. So right now the Theory to Practice thing, I've got a client of mine who's working on that, and it'll be rolling out here in maybe about the next month. And so I'll have some fresh content there. But that's the Keith Norris story in a nutshell. And it's kind of ironic that while I was pushing the pharmaceutical industry at the same time that Michelle was pushing the Starbucks industry. So, oh my, how we have changed in the last few years.
Well, you haven't tapered off on your coffee consumption much, other than that. Yeah. So, you know, how did you guys get onto this paleo concept? And this was like around 2006, 2007 that you guys started sort of fiddling with this stuff, or was it a little earlier than that?
Interesting story. I'll let Michelle take it.
Yeah, it was just a little bit earlier than that. But, well, actually, Keith is the one. I mean, he found you and Art Devaney. And so you kind of need to tell that story. But
yeah, so I'll just kick it off how it started. And then Michelle can tell you how she thought I was freaking out to lunch for a while. Push this down her throat. But essentially, I had a friend who was coaching wrestling at the high school, and of course they were doing it the old school way, you know, diet down to where the kids were emaciated and, you know, they're having their asses handed to them on the mats. And I said, hey, you know, why don't we go about this a little bit different, and how about not diet them down all the way like that, but let's put them on kind of a lower carb gig throughout the season. Not, you know, not ketogenic, but just a little bit lower carb. I'm going to cut out the crap out of their diet and, you know, let's kind of maintain their weight within about 5 pounds of what they're going to wrestle at.
That's a shocking idea.
I know.
And which is exactly Funny. What he told me, you know, this is ludicrous. This is how we've always done it. And I basically said, hey, you know what? You guys sucked last season. You sucked ass. How about try this my way? What could, you can't do any worse.
Right. Right.
So he's like, yeah, you're right. Okay. But to really truncate the story, he was a smart guy. He wanted some documentation to read on how this diet would not affect his athlete's performance. And I was like, okay, well, I'll dig around and pull you up some stuff and show it to you. Anyway, while doing that, I ran into a crazy guy named Rob Wolf and another one named Art Devaney. And while I was looking at totally performance performance aspect of this. You guys kept dropping in these bombs about, you know, this diet's a healthy diet too, and here's why. Of course, I blew that completely off. I could not give a crap about it at that time. I was totally about performance. But as I started reading this stuff, I was like, you know what? I think these guys might actually have something here. I think they're not total crackpots. I think, you know, this diet may actually be
healthy. It's still debatable.
Well, but I'm clearly dodgy. Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, that's how I got into this. And I started eating the diet and feeling better. I've got a whole hypertensive issue that I could talk about that was totally alleviated after I cut out grains.
Interesting.
And I'll let Michelle take it from there. Michelle started having some fibromyalgia issues and it just was feeling shitty. And then I'll let her take it from there.
Yeah, I had been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome. Every time I ate, I was just sick. I mean, literally just sick every single time that I ate. And Keith kept saying, I think you have this celiac thing. And so I thought, oh, he's completely lost his mind. And so whenever we were talking about it, and he, you know, at the time, now remember, I'm an Italian chef. That's my specialty is Italian. I make my own pizza dough, make my own pasta. And, you know, our kids, of course, love that stuff. And Keith loved it. And he had stopped eating it. And every time that I made anything that was relatively carby,
somebody's getting mauled in the background.
Yes. We have wild dogs that have come in. I apologize. Anytime that I made anything relatively carby, Keith made his own dinners. And so it was about a year later, he kept, you know, he's not one to beat you over the head with it or anything, but every time I would complain about my stomach, he'd go, I really think that you need to get this thing checked out. I really think you might have celiac. So about a year later, we were having some kind of, one of the kids was having a birthday or something, and I was making, lots of pizzas and lots of pasta and what have you. And there he was making his own dinner. And I looked at him and I said, you're like really never going to have my pizza or pasta again, are you? And he said, no. And he goes, I really think you should check out the celiac thing. And so I did. And of course, I know I've told you this story before, Rob, but you know, they of course wanted to cut into me, do the whole colonoscopy mm-hmm. thing. I thought, you know, how about I just cut that stuff from my diet and see how that works?
kind of similar to the wrestling coach deal. It's like, let's just experiment and see if things get worse, better, or stay the same. And, you know, make an assessment from there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I did. And 3 weeks later, everything was gone. The fibromyalgia was gone. The chronic fatigue syndrome was gone. What was interesting was everybody in my family had been diagnosed with an early onset rheumatoid arthritis. That was gone. I finally had control over my migraines for the first time in my life since I was 17. It was just, it was like coming out of a fog. It was totally different. It was a complete life-changing thing. But what was even more amazing. Now, of course, I was angry about it. I wasn't happy about the whole thing that I had to eat this way to be healthy. I was mad because I'm giving up all the foods that I love. And so I was kind of in a denial state. Like at some point, I'm putting all these foods back in my life, you know?
Right.
And I was a food writer at the time. And so I was writing for other people and I kept writing. I didn't ever change the way I was writing. I kept writing, you know, my pasta, recipes, whatever. I kept writing all that stuff. And then about 3 more weeks later, it was 6 weeks into paleo. We had not seen all the kids, parents and everything for our son's baseball team for about probably hadn't seen them for about 8 or 9 weeks actually. And I had been into it about 6 weeks and we saw them for the first time in quite a while. And, whenever I saw them all, they were like, oh my God, you look amazing. You've like lost all this weight. What's, you know, cause you know, I hadn't been fat, but I hadn't been, you know, but I had had that, you know, that bloat and the, you know, that little puffiness that you have and all of that stuff. And so they were just like, you look amazing. You look healthy and you look really vibrant. And I felt healthy and energized and vibrant. And, So, and then that's when the belt, you know, the light bulb moment went off and I thought, oh, okay, I think I can help people with this, you know, so that's when the evangelist was born. So anyway, that's kind of how we kind of got started with all of it. So,
and then, anyway. Keith, you were very, very popular with the Theory to Practice blog. You guys have been motoring with the efficient exercise kind of technology for a long time. Lots of bandwidth, lots of credibility there. Michelle, you continued to write about food and clearly shifted your focus more into this kind of paleo genre. But where was the idea for this paleo FX thing? Where was that born? And, you know, was that at the bottom of a 12 pack or something, or, you know, like the way Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was born, or where did that come from?
Almost.
Actually, on a runway in LAX.
Actually, the idea was born on the tarmac of LAX.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Waiting to depart Los Angeles from the first Ancestral Health Symposium.
Okay.
So Michelle and I, and that was a great symposium. I mean, if you think back, Rob, that was the first time that most of us ever met each other, you know, face to face.
Right.
And it was a fantastic conference, and we absolutely loved it. Had a blast. Got to escape the Austin summer heat for some nice 70-degree, you know, Cali weather. It was fabulous. Anyway, when we got done, we were sitting on the tarmac getting ready to take off from LA to come back to Austin. And we just kind of looked at each other and said, you know, that was an awesome conference, but there's not a single one of my clients that would have gotten anything out of that.
Right.
It was way too over their head. I loved it. Michelle loved it, but we're geeks, you know, and everybody who was there were geeks. There was nobody who was a layperson who was there.
There were a few pocket protectors in the audience, for sure.
it was definitely a propeller head conference, which is cool.
We had the nose tape going, for sure.
But we said, you know, here's a great opportunity to dial this down a little bit and kind of do a rubber meets the road type of conference. You know, how do you explain this whole ancestral, you know, evolutionary mindset and that tack to somebody who has no clue, but that you can totally change your lives by teaching it to them.
And have that power of that community event where people
Absolutely.
Can network
yeah.
and connect and share stories and all that. Yeah.
And that was the genesis of the whole idea. And then we said, well, let's do it. And we were initially going to do it at one of our efficient exercise studios, which now is laughable to me.
Right.
It's absolutely laughable, but that's what we were going to do. We were just going to bring in a few people and, you know, have it over a weekend at efficient exercise. Once the idea got started, and Rob, once you came on board and you were the first one to go, okay, you guys are freaking crazy. I don't know what you're doing, but I get to hang out in Austin for a few days, so sign me up. It just took off from there. And it's just been a wild ride for the last 4 years.
And I just have to share a little bit of this story. My wife is probably the only other person besides you guys that kind of knows the backstory on this. This was a couple of weeks before Zoe was you know, going to be close to being born. Like, we were getting in the strike zone. So Nikki was pretty nervous. So we all agreed that we would get in there and just make as much use of me as we could on basically like a day and a half or something like that. And I was like a roofied call girl on this thing. Like, I got drugged from panel to talk to panel to talk. And then because Keith and Michelle are running this whole thing, I stayed with these guys. And we didn't leave the event until probably close to midnight. You guys lived out way on the other side of town, so we didn't get home till like after 1. And then you guys had to be back at the event at like 5. So in addition to just getting drugged through this thing, which was totally awesome, but I was on another planet by the end of this gig. Not only, you know, I think I was on like 15 panels in like, you know, in about 18 hours. And then these guys lived out on the other side of town, went home with you guys. We had to be back at the event by like 6 a.m. or something. That was the biggest kick to the jimmy that I had had in a long, long time. But it was a blast. It was good.
Yeah, we noticed that you've never accepted the invitation.
It would probably take some tasers and a straitjacket to have me stay with you guys on a Paleo FX weekend. The weekend after that, I'll go eat your food and drink your tequila, but that weekend, I steer clear of you guys now.
Yeah, well, you can ask anybody that stays with us during that time period, and to make you
now we rent a house in town.
We don't do that.
So,
but it's, yeah, Michelle and I are blowing and going for that entire week. I mean, it is, I tell everybody I train all year for the week of Paleo FX because it is no sleep and it is going 100 miles an hour the whole time.
Well, and you know, the growth has really been amazing. And I know when you guys first kicked that off, like Mark called me, Mark Sisson, and we always chat about these things. He's like, what do you think about this thing? And I'm like, it could either be genius or it could be an absolute train wreck. I'm not entirely sure. And he was kind of like, that was my thought too, you know. And the first event was amazing, and it's just really it's gotten legs like none of the other kind of ancestral oriented conferences have, because I think you guys have done a really great job of you know, stratifying the material that's offered. Clearly there's plenty of material there for the propeller heads and the folks that wear their pocket protectors like myself. And then, you know, there's incredibly accessible elements to it for people that are brand new to this thing. They're getting drugged there by family members or significant others. And so there's a really great spectrum of material for folks to access. And, you know, I've got to say, you guys went after some things that, frankly, are not popular in the same way that, you know, just talking about protein, carbs, fat seem to keep people excited. Like you guys, early on, you know, we chatted about what we all felt like was important. I was like, you know, the sustainability story really needs to be front and center, and you guys really champion that. And it's not, it's becoming a more popular thing. People are starting to connect the dots, you know, like the work of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, Savory Institute, Polyface Farms, you know, whether you eat paleo or vegan or whatever the story is, if you have kind of an idealistic view of nutrition that is different than the standard American diet and this kind of industrial food complex story, if you value something different than that, and you are not focusing a lot of effort in shoring up the ability to access that food that you want, that stuff is liable to go away or liable to become very, very difficult to access. And so you guys really championed that, and you had some amazing people show up there at the first event, and then, you know, subsequent events clearly. But it was pretty amazing the quality of folks that you were able to rope into that first gig, and how well received, and what folks came up to me after the first event, you know, in between talks, and they, particularly after that first sustainability talk, and they were just kind of like, I've heard you mention this and it never really made sense, but, you know, having like 8 or 10 people up there all talking about the same message, and one person's a lawyer, one person's a biochemist, one person's a farmer, you know, and they're all talking about the same story and the importance of the sustainability piece. That was really powerful.
Yeah, and we really want Paleo FX to be an activist organization. We don't want it to be idle. You know, we don't want this to just be an intellectual pursuit, but we want people to go out and do something. You know, kick some ass, make some changes, change your corner of the world in as big or as little a way as you can, but make a change. And right, sustainability is huge. And like you say, without that, I mean, we're all screwed.
Right.
It doesn't matter what we eat, you're going to be screwed.
So I would argue that you guys have been, I think I already mentioned it, but you guys have been far more successful than any of the other events that have been put together around this story. And I think part of that is that you are focusing, or the focus is broader and more inclusive on the one hand, but I've got this sneaky suspicion too that part of the reason why you guys have been more successful is you guys are actually that evil entity that is a for-profit activity. Like, you guys want this to actually be a successful business, and I think that has driven your evolution in a way that is different than other enterprises. Do you guys have some thoughts on that?
My hope is yes. My hope is that yes, we will be a successful business. The backside story of that, and it's interesting that you bring that up, is that PaleoFX has been very, very successful in theory, financially, and as a business, it has not.
Right.
We completely restructured PaleoFX as a business this year, and we are finally set for it to actually be a successful business. We've been running it because, the thing is that Keith and I don't care about the money. The big thing for us was we wanted to spread the movement and for the movement to continue to get bigger. And that was our whole goal and focus. But the thing is that in one of our other businesses, we have had access to some pretty incredible, self-development people. And one of the things that we learned through that was that it's okay for us to make money doing this, but if we make money, we're actually going to have more reach if we do. And so in thinking through that, we were like, oh, okay, well, actually, we need to make more money so that we can actually get bigger, so that we can actually reach more people, and that we can actually be more, more successful and be, and that has been our whole driver. That's one of the reasons why a lot of people, our ticket price, we've kept our ticket price down on purpose so that it's accessible to people, and that, we offer as much as we do because we want it to be as enticing as it is so that people go, I'm getting a lot of bang for my buck here. I mean, conferences like ours should be upwards of $1,500 to $2,000. And there are lots of conferences where they're that much and there's only three or four, keynote speakers. I mean, we've got at least 15 to 20 really good keynote speakers. And then you've got a lot of ancillary speakers who can command that kind of price even on their own,
right,
that are not keynotes. Some of our keynote speakers should be getting well over that price by themselves. So, the driver is just to spread the message. Anyway, go ahead.
And the simple fact of the matter is that money is simply energy transfer and it greases skids. It allows us to be very, very nimble. And to change on a dime. And without that, without having capital behind you to be able to pull that off, you're dead in the water.
Right.
And you can't move, you can't change, and you can't affect for the better. Michelle and I may be the biggest libertarians you'll ever run into, but I mean, that is, we're capitalists and we're libertarians, and we look at money as energy transfer, and that's it. And to be able to propel this message out to the greater world, which is exactly what we want to do. I mean, we're not keeping paleo a secret. I mean, we're charging as hard and as fast as we can to spread this message out far and wide to everybody. And to be able to do that, you got to have capital.
Well, and clearly you're singing to the choir on that. We may literally drop our listenership down to six people on this, but I'm at a point in that whole story. I could have gone. The fact that I have championed this kind of market-based intervention ranging from healthcare to, sustainable food production it's not popular. Like, I could have gone a lot of different directions, and I've done reasonably well with the endeavors that I've been involved with. But in the back of my head, I've known that making people aware that tying this thing into some market-oriented features, like you said, Keith, so that this thing is very responsive, kind of spins on a dime. One of the challenges that I see within academia is that it becomes an institution, and once something gets institutionalized, then it needs to be protected, and it becomes very slow to evolve and adapt and to bring new information into the midst. And we definitely need our randomized control trials and whatnot, but what has driven the growth of this whole ancestral health movement, interestingly, we've definitely had more research occur in particularly the last 5 years, but that has all been driven by this market element of books and blogs and podcasts and events like both AHS and PaleoFX. But I would argue that the broader reach of PaleoFX has been more catalyzing in that process. And the fact that now folks like Terry Walls are being invited to, the American Multiple Sclerosis Society event, that is happening because there's 15 times more chatter on the MS Society's website talking about Paleo and the Walls protocol than all the other approaches combined. And that's not yet scientific validation. But I still have this sneaky suspicion that, you know, when people go out and buy, you know, cars and home stereos and they compare and contrast and talk about this stuff on the interwebs, that people figure out the things that are working and the things that aren't working rather quickly. And I think that there's incredible power with that. So I'm fully behind you guys on all that stuff. And clearly we're cut out of the same cloth with all that.
Money builds a bigger megaphone. And that's exactly the way we look at it.
Absolutely. And you know, that's also been part of why I've been so adamant that the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, out of everything that's going on, those folks are possibly the most important entity in this whole movement, because there will come a point where we pop our heads up high enough on the radar that some of the established entities are going to want to take our heads off. And sure, we need someone like the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. And I work with those guys a lot. I talk with those guys a lot. Like, they're getting positioned so that maybe at some point we have some spin-off entities, like when we start trying to do some of these decentralized market-oriented healthcare interventions, we're going to pop up on some radars and some folks are going to go after us, and we're going to need somebody to be able to get in and represent us. And that can't happen by for free forever from practicing, you know, people practicing law. So we need some capitalization to be able to shore up all that stuff. So it's pretty damn interesting. What do you guys see as both the opportunities and the challenges over the next, say, like 3 to 5 years in growing PaleoFX itself? Like, what do you feel like is going to be some easy growth areas, and what do you feel like will be some significant challenges?
Personally, I think a lot of the challenges are combating some of these, you know, Me Too type companies who are jumping in just to make a buck off of paleo. Those are going to be some of the challenges for us. And then in the actual movement itself is trying to combat that. There's several companies out there that are kind of trying to capitalize. And unfortunately, they have ingredients in them that are saying that they're paleo and they're not. They've, you know, we've got, soy in the products and everything. And it's like, come on, do your homework if you. So it's hard to combat that, especially for people who are new to paleo, don't really know the story and don't know how to read labels, don't know how to do stuff. And they're thinking, oh, well, it's a paleo product, and don't really understand that that's not how we roll. And all of these, the thing is that there's still, it's nice to have convenience products that are paleo, but at the same time, that's kind of what we rail against a little bit. And so we're going to have to, that's, I think, one of our biggest problems is us trying to figure out what really does work for us in that sense is the convenience products that we want to consume and what we don't. And because we are getting into the process stuff, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so I think those are things, but at the same time, we want to hold up those companies that are good and that are trying to work for our good and that are, you know, using those good ingredients and that are using things that are going to ultimately be good for us and that will help us in the long run. That's for me, that's where I see things, because I'm working from that point of view. So I see that as one of our challenges.
Yeah, Mark Sisson is cracking out a new line, and like I think one of his first offerings is an avocado oil based mayonnaise with pastured eggs. In my own, I have a huge complaint about that product though, and that it does not yet come in a 1 gallon container.
Right.
It's these little pint-sized containers. I'm like, Mark, you're slaying me here. I'll have a recycling, you know, boxes up to the ceiling from ordering this stuff. But you know, there are some folks that are going in and really looking at some of those, you know, like some salad dressings and some different things that do add the convenience, but they're doing that extra step of using things like avocado oil and pastured eggs. And what, right. what folks don't fully grasp when you start saying, okay, I'm going to do pastured eggs, or like, I'm going to make some jerky and it's going to be from 100%, you know, grass-fed, grass-finished beef. We start creating these diversified economies that go much, much beyond just that product itself. There's all this backstory involved with that. I've just been talking with the Savory Institute, and I was approached by some folks that are interested in producing kind of a leather-based clothing, shoe line type of deal. And I had the idea of, hey, why don't we see if we can source all this stuff out of Savory Institute hubs? And so we've been doing some work in that regard. And interestingly and ironically, it looks like we could source all the material from these Savory Institute hubs. The cost wouldn't be any different than getting hides from conventional leather manufacture, but we can do some more ecologically sound tanning practices. We've got that closed loop element of the, you know, the grass-fed production. And then we're also supporting these Savory Institute hubs, which are arguably, you know, reversing desertification and doing all kinds of fantastic things from an ecological perspective. And we're creating these decentralized, diversified, economic kind of development efforts that just don't happen overnight. And we have to really commit to, to your point, Michelle, thinking it through and hopefully doing it as right as we can and being willing to modify things when we need to. But it takes a little bit of time to make that stuff happen. But it's very interesting seeing the birth of some of these other, kind of peripheral or support industries that will help this thing go.
And I kind of look at it in another way. I'm a poli sci guy. So, you know, I look at this as at some point the money that is generated through PaleoFX is going to wind up funding a lot of political activities. And whether, you know, people like it or not, whether you like politics or not, I mean, you got to fight the man at his game, which means, let's just take one example here in Texas, the raw unpasteurized milk laws. It's freaking effing ridiculous that we have to jump through the hoops that we have to, you know, to get our hands on raw unpasteurized milk here in Texas. It's absolutely ridiculous. But every time the bill comes up to be passed, it gets shot down because, you know, the dairy association has money. They can spin all this propaganda about how, you know, people are going to die in the streets from drinking raw unpasteurized milk. And this is just one example. This example is going to go on and on. If we're talking about farm subsidies, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. The only way that we're going to be able to make real change in Washington and in local governments is you've got to have money to be able to back candidates. You've got to have money to throw at the process to get this thing changed. I mean, you can raise your voice, you can do all of this, but essentially, and people don't like to hear it, you're going to have to throw money at it. I mean, that's the only way it's going to change.
I just have to throw in there, like, I'm not personally, from a health standpoint, a fan of raw dairy. I still see, for my opinion, too many issues with dairy to make it a really broad recommendation, but I will go lay down in front of a speeding car to protect a raw dairy producer.
Sure.
Because their freedom and the ability for other people to freely access that individual is more important than my personal opinion on that stuff. And so I think that's another piece of this story, that even though we can construct some very high-minded, idealistic approaches to all of this stuff, there's still a reality that the most important piece of all this is freedom of access and individuals having the ability to make choices for themselves. And yes, that's really where the rubber hits the road. And, you know, the fanaticism of the paleo scene is both an amazing benefit and also something that makes me just want to like run away in the woods and never come back near the interweb sometime. And it's sometimes I will literally look at, I'm kind of like, God, did I have a hand in creating this disaster? You know, when people are like eating their own young online. So it's something that I try to gently at times, and other times when I'm jet lagged and tired, not so gently remind people that, you know, so long as we, and Joel Salatin is so eloquent in talking about this. If folks want to have conventionally raised meat and do that whole thing, that's fine. Just let us do what we want to do too.
Yeah.
You know, can we please have that option?
Thing. Yeah.
I mean, we're not asking for any subsidies. We're asking for a level playing field so that these people can actually compete with the mega farmers.
Right.
Right now the tables are so tilted, you know, the mom and pop shops, the mom and pop ranches, they can't compete. I mean, economically, they simply cannot compete.
And I remember it, maybe the first Paleo FX, I think maybe, and I think I've mentioned this a couple of different events, but you know, is it ideal that currently a lot of our grass-fed meat producers, like Masa Meats is a sponsor of my podcast, those folks currently ship meat around the United States. Is it the most ecologically sound thing to box that stuff up in styrofoam and ship it around? No, but we are not yet at a spot where the local demand for those folks can completely meet all of their needs. And so we have to, you know, make some, again, be flexible with this and keep in mind that the goal clearly is to be able to source, produce, and consume a lot more of our food on a much more local level, but that doesn't just happen overnight. So we've got to be a little bit flexible on some of these other pieces until we get those industries up and going and they're self-sustainable.
Yep, exactly.
I agree.
So guys, what else? What else should we let folks know who's going to be at the upcoming event in April?
Oh, we have lots of surprises. We have, there's going to be a lot of really cool new stuff at Paleo FX. We have tripled in size this year. So we have all of Palmer this year.
Nice. Which,
yeah. So what you saw last year, now it will be more than double, which gives me heart palpitations. I have to tell you, I walked into that cavern the other day and went, oh my God, I have to build this place. Anyway, so it's crazy. We've got a lot of really cool stuff. We've got, we have an award show that we're going to have this year. So it'll be our first annual award show. And then we have a Paleo FX's answer to the football combine and CrossFit games. We have it's the Warrior Rumble.
Nice.
So it's Paleo FX Warrior Rumble. So people can come and compete, and you can only do this at Paleo FX because you have to have an ARX machine to be able to compete, and it's really cool. So we're going to have that, and we have we got a lot of really cool stuff coming. We have obviously, you and Rob plan to show up again, which we're very appreciative of. I mean, you and Mark plan to show up again. And Chris Kresser and Dallas and Melissa. And we have some really cool new people coming on the scene. We had over 250 submissions this year.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was very heartbreaking to turn away as many people as we had to turn away. But they were all really good, and it's you know, first world problems, obviously. Great problem to have.
But, so I think Doc Parsley and then also Dr. Michael Ruscio will be there.
Yes.
Tucker Max again.
Yes.
I'm advocating for a wrestling mat so that we can get some jujitsu in between sessions. So if Keith, if you can find somebody with a disinfected wrestling mat from a local high school, then I would greatly appreciate
that. Our immune systems are tip top, and we can take the infected mat.
Okay, perfect.
Whitney Miller will be there too, speaking of BJJ, so she can throw you around a little bit too.
Nice. Whitney was supposed to be on my podcast like a week ago, but something weird happened. Like she had a quick trip to Chicago or something. I forget exactly what happened. So we'll get that buttoned up. Yeah.
It's a cool girl. Yeah. You definitely want to interview
awesome
her.
Awesome girl. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one girl I don't want to meet in an alley and have her be on my bedside.
She is a fire breather, man. Yeah. Big time. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how you go from Miss USA to that, but she's a badass for sure.
Well, I tell you how you do it. You look good the whole way. That's pretty easy.
That helps.
You look good the whole time. So, Well, awesome, guys. Well, I'm very, very grateful for all the work that you guys have done. I'm very grateful and honored that you guys took a leap of faith and reached out to me and had me involved in not only the first event, but subsequent events. I haven't worn out my welcome yet. So that feels awesome. And, the only downside for me of doing these events is that I kind of wish that they were a week and that we could all, you know, spend multiple days just going out to lunch and lifting some weights and hanging out and, you know, stomping around. But clearly that's not really possible, at least not currently. Maybe someday we'll turn this thing into a week-long event, but Michelle will probably not enjoy that. So
you know what?
That's to come, but it's
seriously looking that way.
We are looking at that possibility. So
nice.
We are looking at that, but we are super grateful to you for believing in us and for taking the leap of faith and helping us get it off the ground. So we really do appreciate that, even though, you know, sometimes we do blame you for that. So at night, sometimes I do curse your name. No, I'm kidding. We really do really appreciate you believing in us and being involved and helping us get it off the ground. And we just really appreciate you putting your faith in us. So
it's been an honor for me, and it's always a ton of fun. And I think we probably will have the whole family out there this year. So we'll have Zoe and Sagan in tow. The whole wolf pack will be there. So you guys better be stocked up on barbecue. Zoe can dust about a half pound of ribs by herself in a sitting. So please be prepared. Be prepared.
Austin is so cool in the fact that even by our standards, bad barbecue is kick-ass to anybody else.
Right, right.
That's right. That's right. Well, we have plenty of barbecue for everybody, so we're all prepared. So that's going to be a cool one. So a cool thing for everybody. A barbecue place, one of the best barbecue places, actually popped up right across from Palmer.
Right, right, right.
Yep. Literally across from Palmer. Yeah. So I think everybody's going to be very pleased.
Very cool.
Yep.
Well, awesome, guys. Well, I can't wait to see you. I think I've got a talk brewing that I'm working on with hopefully it's one of the – I'm excited. I think it might be one of the better talks that I've put together looking at kind of the novelty of our modern environment and this idea that you know, the fact that anybody isn't obese, diabetic, and broken is actually kind of miraculous. And hopefully it'll be a lift some inner child beating that folks give themselves when they find these lifestyle changes difficult. Like I think if we can wrap our heads around this kind of evolutionary medicine idea that there was a time when we would have been dumb to not eat the Krispy Kreme or anything else that came our way, and now we just have a little bit too much access to it. And if we can embrace that, then, you know, we still need to figure out how to change, but hopefully the morality and the self, you know, the self-flagellation that grows out of that difficulty, hopefully that'll go away a little bit. But that's what I'm working on.
That sounds like an awesome talk, an awesome topic too. Yeah.
It'll either be really good or it'll be a complete fart in church. We'll see how it goes. So we shall see. Yeah.
Your submissions are the ones that I enjoy the most because you're so self-deprecating. It cracks me up. I go through the thing. And we have a question where it says, why are you qualified to speak at PaleoFX? And it says low standard. I never laughed so hard in my life when I saw that. I was like,
okay. I was like, I don't know if anybody reads any of this stuff, but
oh, I do. I read them all. I have to read them all. So, but I laugh every time I read yours because it's at low standards.
Well, Rob, just to let you know, we will have a couple psychedelics panels as well and workshops. So if it goes too far south, you can just slide into one of those and just go away for a little bit.
You're singing my song now. That sounds perfect. That sounds perfect.
Yeah.
Well, guys, it was great having you on the show. Really looking forward to PaleoFX this year. I will have links to the event so that folks can purchase tickets online. And I know you guys have more and more media coming up, kind of highlighting what that event will look like and who will be there.
Yes.
Awesome. All right, guys.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Keep all the wheels on the wagon until we make it to Austin, and we'll see you guys soon.
Right on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us on.
A huge honor. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.